My mother was very familiar with her neighborhood, but one day she stopped at the stop sign and she wasn't even really sure where she was at.
When something feels different, it could be Alzheimer's. Now is the time to talk. A message from the Alzheimer's Association and the Ad Council.
From the opinion pages of the Wall Street Journal, this is Potomac Watch.
Tim Pawlenty loses his comeback bid for governor in Minnesota while Democrats nominate a school superintendent to run against Scott Walker in Wisconsin's governor's race, and Republicans go for an outsider in Connecticut. We'll tell you what these and other primary results from Tuesday mean. Plus, Donald Trump escalates his feud with former White House aide Omarosa Manigault-Newman. Is there a point to this nonsense? We will ask each other. Welcome. I'm Paul Gigot, and here with me to talk about these and other matters, Bill McGurn. How are you, Bill?
Hi, Paul.
And Alicia Finley. Hey, Alicia.
Hi, Paul.
So let's start here with the primary results, and you guys can tell me what a couple of things that struck you. I think I'll start with Pawlenty, Minnesota, two-term governor. The one governor in 2006 to survive the big Democratic wave of that year, ran for president against Mitt Romney in 2000 and I guess it was 12, and lost early. Went to work for the financial industry, lobbyist for the banks. Went back to run in Minnesota and got beat. Lost his bid to Jeff Johnson, a businessman, former state legislator from the western part of the state, beautiful part of the state. I know neither of you know Minnesota very well, but Detroit Lakes, I used to we summered there once in a while as a kid. It's a beautiful part of the country. And has a chance to take back the governorship from the Democrats who've run it for 8 years now, at least, and running against Tim Walz, a former congressman who's going to try to take the to the state house. Interesting result, going for the outsider. Pawlenty said, "It's Donald Trump's party now, and I'm not a Trump type Republican."
Yeah, I agree. I mean, the interesting thing you mentioned, it's not just 8 years after a Democratic governor in Minnesota. If the Republican wins, if Jeff Johnson wins, he will be the first, and they keep the House and the Senate there. It'll be the first time in like 66 years that Republicans have had full control of the government there. So it's a big race for that. I think Tim Pawlenty had a very decent record as a governor. In fact, in 2012, at one point, he was my candidate for president. But I think his moment passed, you know, when he didn't seem able to repeat before Governor Romney the criticisms of Romney Care that he had made out on the trail. And I just think his moment has passed. And with Trump, he had called Donald Trump unsound, uninformed, unhinged, and unfit. And, you know, in the Trump era, that probably came back to bite him. He lost by a considerable margin, too.
Yeah, he did. It was a surprise. Okay, what races would you focus on, Alicia, from Tuesday?
Well, I think I would also focus on the Wisconsin, the Senate race, as well as the governor's race. Tony Evers, the state superintendent, won in a four-way race field to take on Scott Walker in the fall. He did pretty well in the Milwaukee suburbs. This is going to be a referendum on Scott Walker, though I think he could very well be hurt by the anti-Trump wave, the liberal enthusiasm, which we really saw in the turnout numbers. The problem here for Republicans are also hoping to be Tammy Baldwin, the Democratic senator, and Leah Buchmer, who was a state senator who helped champion some of Scott Walker's collective bargaining reforms. She beat Robert Nicholson, who was a former Democrat and Marine who really kind of wrapped himself around Trump. But Leah Buchmer did much better in the Milwaukee suburbs, as well as Dane County. And I think this does show that there is continued support among the GOP for Scott Walker's agenda. Again, the trouble is going to be if liberal enthusiasm is just too much to overcome in November, in which case if Scott Walker loses, I think you could also see the state house go Democratic as well.
Yeah, Dane County being around Madison. Leah Vukmir, one of the leaders in challenging not just Walker's agenda, but taking on that John Doe, that outrageous John Doe investigation of campaign finance that we wrote about quite a bit. Interesting that she beat Kevin Nicholson so soundly. I mean, she beat him 49-43, and that was a close race. Won a billionaire Wisconsinite, the Ulines, spent $8 million for Kevin Nicholson. So I thought that was very interesting. It speaks, I think, to the fact that Wisconsin actually has a quite a strong Republican Party structure. And it and Vukmir has gone up through that structure. Nicholson tried to come in on the outside, run as the outsider, former Democrat, great resume, former Marine, tours in Afghanistan and Iraq, a business consultant. But the party knows, I think, the voters knew Vukmir better and were willing to go with her.
She was also pretty strong in the suburbs, right, where the Republicans are weak this year. She had a lot of support in those suburban districts and probably among women and so forth. So she's an interesting candidate. I think it's a real uphill struggle for her against Tammy Baldwin. You know, I would love for her to win, but I wouldn't bet my house on it.
Yeah, especially I think this year, as Alicia said, the enthusiasm in Wisconsin for the Democrats is really high, and I think it's going to be a struggle for Walker to win against Tony Evers, who won comfortably, Alicia, in the Democratic primary, won more easily than I would have thought in a multi-person primary.
Yeah, I think that's partly just he had more name recognition. The other three really didn't get their – they didn't have the funding. And I think there was the support among the liberal groups was a little split. But Tony Evers has really aligned himself with the teachers unions, which are going to be spending probably the biggest spenders in this election because they really see overturning Scott Walker's collective bargaining reforms as critical, partly because they were so symbolic nationally, also because unions have taken a huge financial hit because of them.
Yeah. Interesting. One other anecdote. Paul Nealon, who was the kind of crazy challenger to Paul Ryan 2 years ago in Ryan's district, ran again, though Ryan, of course, is resigning and again in a multi-candidate field in the Republican primary there and got crushed, I am happy to say. he remembered Breitbart was pushing him as the next Speaker of the House.
Right.
and he went down in flames. So let's also talk about Connecticut. Bob Stefanowski, a businessman, former UBS employee, financier, won the Republican primary, again, a multi-candidate field, promising total tax reform.
Right.
He's going to get rid of the estate and gift tax right away. He's going to wait 2 years on the corporate tax, phase that out, and 8 years on the income tax. I think it's fair to say that's a bold proposal. and he's going to be running, but he won. And we know, Alicia, Connecticut needs tax reform for sure. It's had a horrible economic record under current Governor Daniel Malloy. He's not running for reelection, but the person who is, Ned Lamont, is running for election. He won the Democratic nomination. He's the Democrat who, remember, beat Joe Lieberman in the Senate primary some years back running, and then Lieberman ran as an independent and beat Ned Lamont. So Lamont's well known among Democrats, but he's promising essentially the Malloy agenda, more of the same.
That's right. I mean, he's trying to distance himself from Malloy in part because Malloy is so unpopular. I think he's the least popular governor in the country. So he's running a little bit from Malloy. But when he was asked point blank, well, would you raise taxes? He said, yes. And this is really, I think, Republicans and I think a lot of independent voters are kind of tired of being nickeled and dimed. Malloy increased the corporate tax, imposed surcharge, increased the income taxes, and now they're talking about increasing tolls. And
that's part of the Ned Lamont agenda.
Yeah.
It's expressly, let's raise tolls. Never popular in a commuting state.
Yeah, Paul, look, Connecticut has some of its top businesses leaving the state, right, every day. Tax, some of the highest tax rates in the country, regulations, you know, all over the place, just a dismal place. And yet I am envious as a resident of New Jersey, because at least there's a Republican candidate who may have a chance, because people are tired of this. They see where this leads, this kind of blue state agenda leads states. And I think that Lamont's going to have a hard time. I mean, look, the Republican, they're both businessmen, right? Lamont touts his business credentials.
Right.
But Stefanowski's going to tie him to Malloy, and it's hard to see how he can avoid that. His agenda is pretty much the same. He wants higher minimum wage, more education spending, but not any structural reform of the economy.
We're talking about the latest primary election results and Omarosa versus Donald Trump. You're listening to Potomac Watch when we come back.
My mother was very familiar with her neighborhood, but one day she stopped at the stop sign and she wasn't even really sure where she was at.
When something feels different, it could be Alzheimer's. Now is the time to talk. A message from the Alzheimer's Association and the Ad Council.
Spend time with Alexa. You can now listen to Potomac Watch on your Amazon device. Just enable the skill and ask Alexa to play Potomac Watch from the Wall Street Journal.
From the opinion pages of the Wall Street Journal, this is Potomac Watch.
Welcome back. I'm Paul Gigot with Bill McGurn and Alicia Finley. Just to finish up on the Connecticut race, you know, there's a pretty good record of Republican governors who've made it even in the liberal Northeast. Charlie Baker is probably going to win re-election in Massachusetts. He's quite popular. Paul LePage, less popular in Maine, but he has served for 2 years. New Hampshire has a Republican governor, and even Vermont, the People's Republic, has a Republican governor. Phil Scott probably going to win re-election, although the Democrats nominated Christine Holquist, who is the first transgender. Right. Candidate for governor in the country. Scott is popular, so he's certainly the favorite, but it is a left-leaning state.
I think that's right. And the way Republicans have kind of tried to neutralize the cultural issues and focus not just on fiscal issues, economic issues, growing the economy. Phil Scott actually has a pretty good record. If you look at the jobs growth in Vermont in the last year, it's been pretty impressive. Same thing in Massachusetts. So the difficulty in Connecticut will be to try to tamp down on those or try to reduce the importance of these cultural issues. And they're going to try to, the Democrats are obviously going to try to bring up gun control. They'll bring up abortion and try to kind of throw some gotchas at Stefanowski. But I think the way they succeed is to focus on these fiscal and economic issues.
Yeah. And in Vermont, I think, Paul, what you were pointing to is, that's been heralded on the front pages of the kind of latest victory in the identity politics. It's the most prominent, because most of the other cases we've seen, what we learned from the primaries is that where these kind of candidates win, like the woman out in Minnesota, I think, and the African-American woman who won in I forget which district in Connecticut, they tend to be smaller districts, which are liberal and very reliably blue. That's where, you know, you can run your identity politics full tilt and probably win. Vermont's interesting because it's statewide. There haven't been as many successes there. But even so, what no one really talks about is she is the underdog in this race. She may be the first nominee, but the odds suggest she's not going to be the first governor.
Okay. Let's turn to Donald J. Trump versus Omarosa, his former White House aide. She has a book out. As well as bringing tapes of conversations inside the White House, which certainly don't flatter the staff or the president there. She's highly critical, says he's mentally deficient. He is a racist and a bigot and should not be in the White House. Donald Trump has replied with his familiar restraint, calling her wacky Omarosa. And most recently, a dog. I think even Trump said, People are going to say I'm unpresidential for doing this, but I just have to point out I helped her out. I gave her a job when she begged. She cried. I gave her a job and so on. What we've learned about Donald Trump is he is going to tweet. So forget about stopping that. He is going to hit back at anyone who criticizes him. So let's give up on stopping that. But does he have to do it in such a way that makes him look small? That hurt him?
Yeah, well, I think, look, Donald Trump's philosophy is obviously there's no success like excess, right? And he piles it on. And also, he in this case particular, he ignored Napoleon's maxim, don't interfere when the enemy is destroying himself. You know, leave him alone. Omarosa is not a popular figure. Most people think she's a nut, should not have been at the White House in the first place and so forth. And I don't know whether he's created sympathy for her, but he's sort of clouded the issue. I mean, most of the stories, including in a lot of parts of the press that would normally attack Donald Trump, have attacked her charges as kind of thinly sourced and so forth. I think most of us would have let that happen. But as you point out, that's not President Trump's style.
Well, how much damage, Alicia, do you think this is going to do politically, or is this just one more passing storm?
Well, I think it's more the latter, but it's one more distraction and it prevents Republicans from getting their message out on economic growth and really during this, the August where they're really trying to focus and campaign. And they're going to have the news is being consumed with Omarosa's Trump feud. And I think that's really unfortunate because this will probably end up continuing through November. These personal spats, he took on LeBron James the other week. He's called, Maxine Waters, low IQ. And the press just homes in on this and nothing else manages to float to the top.
Yeah, I will add, just as someone that worked in a White House, the Situation Room, the idea of a staffer taping the chief of staff is just extraordinary to me. You know, if I had been brought in the Situation Room by the chief of staff, I would presume he was going to tell me there was a plot on the president's life and one of your deputies is implicated in something that serious. And to tape the chief of staff is usually feared. It makes my heart go out for General Kelly because I think this is a thankless but important job he has to kind of quash this kind of silliness.
But if Trump had said in a tweet, instead of calling her names, had just said, I gave Omarosa a chance,
right.
Brought her in. It didn't work out. And now she's run this. She's publishing right. This book that is really betraying
Sad.
Confidences. Well, he could even just say just disappointing.
Right. That's not Donald Trump, right? I mean, that's
you want to see – and the reason I point this out is I think there's a lot of voters out there who the people who voted for Donald Trump who are beginning to suffer exhaustion from all of this kind of daily barrage. And it becomes a question of is he going to show any growth in terms of personal character in the White House as president, any at all? Or are we going to be besieged by this for the next 2 years? And I think the danger for Trump is that these people just become kind of tired of it and say, I'm sorry, I'm just not going to vote.
I agree with that, except I think the targeted audience is slightly different. I don't think it's so much the people that voted for Trump. A lot of people, I think, who voted for Trump like that he fights back. That's what, they're used to all sorts of outrages. I mean, look at the Times hiring of an editorial writer, with these insane tweets, right? And another writer who was sleeping with her source to get government secrets. So I think a lot of the people who voted for him like the idea of someone punching back. But I think the group that you're talking about is not necessarily people who voted for Trump, but who like the agenda that they've seen on the substance, regulation, tax cuts, the judges, but will be turned. Those are the people we need to turn out in those marginal House races in the suburbs, right?
But
and they may not have voted for Trump the first time, but they could be gettable. And I'm not sure they are gettable.
I think
now.
A lot of those people did vote for Trump, mm-hmm. and they voted for Trump despite their misgivings for the policy reasons that you state, or because they were worried about the trend in the country
right.
and where the country was going, or they didn't like Hillary Clinton, a variety of reasons. But they like the policies. They may have benefited from the
right.
policies. So you can think of a Christian voter, for example, who's
right.
Who's an evangelical who swallowed his or her you know, character doubts about Trump for the Supreme Court,
right?
And probably loves the Kavanaugh appointment and loves the Gorsuch appointment, but says, "Oh man, do you have to show me every day that you don't respect the office?"
Yeah, it's an insult to voters. I think that's exactly right. You know, there are many voters who voted for him because of the Supreme Court vacancy, and they didn't like the cultural trajectory of the country, but also, you know, the economy, we forget, was really still not doing well. Growth was pretty slow. But at this point, you know, there are about 60, more than 60 House seats that are competitive, and many of these are in these suburban areas where Trump did reasonably well, or some of them Hillary Clinton did win. But they're filled with women as well as more moderate voters who they may get exhausted or have at some point suffer from Trump exhaustion.
All right. Alicia, thank you. Bill, thank you. Thank you all for listening. We will be back on Friday with another edition of Potomac Watch.